Hey, Kev.
Hey.
Time for the show. Good to see you. What's going on, buddy?
Well, not much, not much. I'm just polishing
Kevin,
and...
what is that? What is that that you've...
It's a rifle.
It looks like a rifle.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
What are you doing with a rifle?
Oh, my... Well, you know, you're never too prudent. Sometimes, you know, you get some people out there that can really overpower you and...
But this is our studio. What in the world are you doing with a... Wait a minute! It looks like are you pointing that at me?
No! Never do such a thing. But you'll see. You'll see.
Kevin, should I be a little concerned?
No, not at all.
Sure, everything's okay.
Just sit there. Just sit. Don't mind the big X there where you're sitting.
Kevin, I don't know. I just feel a little anxious. I mean, this is the first time in all these years. Is there something going on that you haven't told me?
No, not at all. Would I do such a thing?
Well, I never thought you would.
No, I would never do such a thing. Don't worry.
Am I okay, Kevin?
You're absolutely fine.
Are you sure?
Yes, this is for Christina. You know how she gets.
I trust you, Kevin.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you and I have always, you know, been kind of partners. Kevin,
Because there's a big bullseye on your chair doesn't mean anything. Just relax. Don't worry. We'll do a great show.
What about Christina?
No.
Why are you blaming Christina for something?
I'll let you know later.
Uh-oh. All right, well, I'm... What is this X here, Kevin?
Hi, I'm Michael Sparks, and I took a left at the Valley.
I know we shouldn't have to scream that we're atheists, you know. We don't have non-astrologers and all that. But with religious people taking over the world, I mean, we can either speak up or be pushed into a corner.
I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. You just call it faith and unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
Coming at you from Hazy DC, this is Left of the Valley. My name is Kevin, and I rented a lotto ticket and won $1 million, but I had to give it back. Joining me as usual is a team that knows it's a small world after all, but they're sure happy they don't have to paint it.
Yeah, that would take a while.
She has a quantum car. Every time she looks at the speedometer, she gets lost. Nancy.
Easy to do.
She'll tell you that drugs lead to nowhere, but at least it's a scenic route. Christina.
It is, and it's fun. It's a fun route.
And her last job was to be a small claims court jester. Kirsten.
Yeah, they kicked me out of that one.
Ladies, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Hope you had a great week.
I cuddled puppies.
Oh, jeez. Sounds like it's such a hard, hard life.
I know.
It's been a smoky week, but...
It's going to get the whole freaking province is on fire.
Yeah.
So we'll have a great show today. Today we'll be talking to Eli Bosnick, and we'll have a mystery guest. Nancy, you're not allowed to know what it is.
Uh-oh.
But in the meantime, let's do a bit of chit-chat. But hey, before all that, we have a guest in studio.
Woo-hoo. Hello.
My buddy, Ahmed. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Good to see you.
It's so good to see you. You have no idea. This warms my heart so much. This guy, I used to work with this guy, and we had so many great conversations. I have nothing but total admiration for this guy's intelligence and everything.
Thank
and
you.
Everything
likewise.
Likewise.
Well, we've got a lot to live up to this show then, don't we?
Yeah, we totally have this bromance going on here between me and Ahmed, you know. Oh, yeah. And I hear you get some
I'm going to stay for a while after the show.
You get some great news. You just said that you're expecting. Your wife is expecting.
Yeah, a boy.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations. How far along is she?
We're expecting on November 11, hopefully.
Oh,
so right.
Wow. That is great news.
Yeah,
that's
congratulations.
Great news.
Thank you.
That's going to be fun. And Ahmed is here because today we're going to do something a bit different before the whole interview with Eli. We're going to have a bit of a roundtable discussion on Saudi Arabia and the whole thing that's been going on there.
Oh,
and I've got him, and I've got Majed Soliman coming a bit later on as well. We'll talk about that because these guys have a bit more expertise than you and I certainly do have on these matters. But first of all, before I want to do all this, I got to talk about this one thing because we have...
Mail time!
Mail time!
Yeah, we got some mail!
Here.
I love it when we get mail.
We don't get a lot of mail, but we did get a piece of mail. And this is from John. He says, "Hi there, I'm an avid listener." Well, thank you, John, of the show. "And so I would like to offer a polite correction from your recent episode from last week."
Thank you, John.
In it, you said that Samar Badawi, the woman recently arrested in Saudi Arabia, becoming the catalyst for the spat between the country and Canada, was the wife of Rhea Badawi. I did say that, and that was a mistake. She's, in fact, Raif Badawi's sister and a Saudi national. He is quite correct. My bad. Totally my bad. Thank you so much, John. After her husband's arrest, she was eventually granted asylum in Canada because she's an... I skipped a line here. Badawi's wife is Ansaf Haider, and after her husband's arrest, she was eventually granted asylum in Canada because she is an activist, too. She currently resides in Sherbrooke, Quebec, with her three children, as a taking Canadian citizenship in the last few months. He's completely right. I hope you don't mind me sticking my nose. Keep up the great work. John, thank you so much for this. You're absolutely right, sir. My bad. It's on me.
Oh, we appreciate John. We really appreciate and listening so carefully to the details. Man, you're a great listener. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, John just said the half of what I was going to hear coming here to say, so I think I'm done.
Well, there we go. Show's done.
Thanks,
Show's
John.
Okay, so let's bring in our second guest, Majed, there. And there he is. He's online with us. Majed, how you doing, buddy? It's been so long.
Not too bad, Gav. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you as well, of course. And I brought you an Ahmed today because both of you guys are Egyptian nationals from birth. And although we couldn't get anybody from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to come in, that's like, it's a bit like asking a Canadian what's going on in the States. Now we're asking an Egyptian what the hell is going on in Saudi Arabia. Yeah,
but you know, I lived for eight years, right?
Yeah,
before I came to Canada.
So this is one of the reasons why both of you guys are here, because you can give us actually the lowdown of what the hell is going on over there. Yeah. But first, let's do our normal chit chat of all the stuff that's been going on during the week. Okay. I guess let's start with some bad news, I guess. The Queen of Soul died, Aretha Franklin.
But her spirit and her music will live on forever.
Yeah, I mean, the woman was so brilliant. She was probably one of the greatest artists and singers we've ever seen, ever.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see the love that was poured out towards, you know, when you think soul, you don't think of it as a super popular style of music, but...
Well, it depends on the part of the country and so forth. I think she probably represented soul better than anybody. I mean, she was absolutely the epitome, and had many admirers and many people that tried to imitate her style, but she was singular.
I mean, some people are saying she's bigger now than, she's a bigger legend now than even Elvis was.
I think so.
And it's just amazing to think. I mean, I was watching the video where she goes to the Kennedy Center Honors in 2015. This is like 3 years ago, at the age of 73, because she was 76 when she passed away this week. And she sits at the piano and plays and gets up and sings. It's like Barack Obama, the president, was there at the time. And my God, the power of this woman's voice is just...
He cried.
Yes. And it's almost... You almost can't help you. So I was like, God. Even if you're not a fan of soul, it's just absolutely amazing to see her go. And what a shame. Well, rest in peace for the Aretha
Franklin.
Well,
let's all be glad she was here as long as she was.
Yes, exactly. In other news, did you guys hear the one about the Arkansas courthouse? They unveiled an 8-foot statue of Baphomet.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, it makes me so happy.
This is Arkansas. They passed a motion to put the Ten Commandments on the courthouse steps there, and basically the Satanic Temple decided to go and said, "Well, if you're going to do that, then we have the right to put our statue of Baphomet," and they did.
And they absolutely do have the right.
They absolutely do.
And the Arkansas legislator never saw. I guess they never saw this coming. You know that they thought, "Oh, good."
How could they not see it coming?
Yeah,
they've been talking about it for the last couple of years.
They have. I think you were just saying that they're not going to actually do it, and boom, all of a sudden there it is.
Yeah, and it's a nice statue.
It's very nice.
It is a nice
statue. Mm-hmm. Piece of art.
What I find funny now is inadvertently, by putting the statue of Baphomet there, it gives credibility in a way in a very strange, obscured way to all the crackpots out there. They're saying the satanists, the Satanists are taking over the world and the pedophiles and all that.
Well, they're already saying it.
So, well, I hope the Satanists take over. Man.
Majed, I love it when you're on the show because you're just like cursing. You don't say a lot, but when you say something, it's just gold every time.
I really am enthusiastic to find out the consequences.
Yes, we're gonna have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
And,
well, they've been playing that card for a long time too, right? Like they would go with a guy like one of their priests that will actually ask during an official council to pray a satanic prayer.
Yes.
I don't know if you have seen that before.
Oh,
but.
I totally have.
No, we admire them. They are on the forefront of separation of church and state like no other organization.
But,
they're
but
great.
Like Majed was saying, there was this one guy, and it's so brilliant because it's almost a show, and he shows up with a dark robe and the dark
hood.
He's about to do an invocation, and all the Christians stand up and open their Bible, and they start...
Yeah, exactly.
Counting like counter spells, you know.
It was phenomenal.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant. Okay, and something more Canadian. Did you guys hear that the Conservative MP Michelle Rempel basically said, quote, fact checkers are part of the government conspiracy?
Yes!
Oh, no.
It's a spin tool against Conservative. Because she said that because there's an outfit called the Canadian Press, which is a private agency, and they have what they call a baloney meter. In other words, whenever a politician says something, they go check the baloney meter, whether it's true or not. And she says, no, that's part of a big government conspiracy. They're controlled by Justin Trudeau somehow.
Wow. Okay.
The politics of Trump's are trying to make their way right here into Canada.
Yeah.
And speaking of Canadian MP, did you guys hear about Maxime Bernier? He criticized the Liberals for, quote, extreme multiculturalism. He basically said that Trudeau's cult of diversity will divide us into little tribes. That
what?
Was a tweet. Yes. He's basically, yeah, this is Bernier, of course, is the MP that challenged Andrew Scheer for the leadership. He lost, but he's always been a big name in the Conservative Party. He had a portfolio as a critic, and he was removed from that portfolio in June. And now people are saying the Conservative Party is actually distancing themselves from what he said, saying... You're kind of crossing the line there.
Well, especially when Canada's built on multiculturalism.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Canada doesn't have a solid, like, we've been here for thousands of years. This is who we are. We're like, no, we're everyone.
Yeah.
We are
yeah.
everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to watch where that goes. I know you're keeping an eye on that. I know for sure.
I haven't heard about it before, but I will now.
Oh, yeah. Laurentian University, Dr. Michael... Persinger, do you guys know him?
No.
Dead at the age of 73. He's the guy who invented the God helmet.
I don't even know what that is.
That's the...
What's the God helmet?
The God helmet is... He did
like Magneto?
Well, sort of. Sort of. It was an experiment he did with magnetism, and he had put a helmet on, and with manipulating the brain, he can make you feel that God feeling.
That is cool.
That experience of that revelation experience. And this is why it gave huge,
that is so cool.
Remove the credibility of all these people that are saying they have this God experience when you can actually reproduce the experience in the lab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He died this week at the age of 73.
That's so sad.
And,
I'm sorry.
And good news, Trinity Western University dropped their covenant.
Oh, at last.
Yep.
That's good.
That the covenant that they said, there is no sex out. You gotta sign the covenant if you're gonna be a student here, but there's no sex outside of marriage, heterosexual marriage, and you can't even date, stuff like that. All of a sudden, they lost in court. Okay, fine, we'll drop the covenant.
Yeah, I mean they were forced into it, but overall, it's a good move.
Exactly. So big victory for us.
Now to the interesting part of that is that that's only for students. The faculty is still bound by the covenant.
Hmm.
That is interesting. So let's see where that goes.
Yeah, that is interesting. So your TWU students, you can go back on date night now.
That's
well,
right.
They don't date. They court.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, milady. We shall court you with roses. internationally, the Boston Globe convinced over 100 papers to do editorials against Trump's war on the press. and that happened on the 16th. Did you guys catch a bit of a glimpse of that?
Yeah.
I didn't.
It didn't make a big wave, but it's the press basically fighting back against Trump's stupid quote of saying the press is the enemy of the people.
Yeah, each newspaper, each media outlet could have their own statement. It wasn't as though they had a unified statement about freedom of the press, and this is a pushback against Trump's enemy of the people. But it shows that there's a vibrant, live, free press, and fingers crossed that they will always be that way, and Trump isn't going to try to undermine them and to shut them down, because the Republican Party sure isn't going to give any pushback if he tries to do that.
No, exactly. So I'm glad to see that. And, you know, for people that might even slightly agree with Trump, the press is not the enemy of the people. The press is the immune system of a democracy. Mm-hmm. When the press doesn't do his job, you get a sick democracy really, really quick.
And when there is no press, democracy dies.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, we got to talk, of course, about the huge revelation about the Catholic Church abusing over 1,000 kids by about 300 priests in Pennsylvania.
That's one state. Not a big state. Well,
wasn't it 59 priests in Pennsylvania?
No, it was over 300, apparently. 300 predatory priests. This was a report by a grand jury. It covered six of the eight dioceses in the state. The report comes after the resignation of Cardinal McCarrick. One in four residents is Catholic in Pennsylvania. They reviewed about 500,000 secret documents that from the churches, and apparently the majority of these molestation and slash rape occurred before 2002, because in 2002, what they did is the church installed new guidelines saying you had to report abuse to police. So it's kind of nice to see that guideline seemed to have worked to some extent, but the damage had already been done.
Well, part of the problem in Pennsylvania is that there's only a 2-year statute of limitations.
Yes.
So
if a 6-year-old is abused by the priest, by the time he's 8, he or his family can no longer file charges. Now there's a movement, of course, to extend that, or perhaps have
get rid of it.
No limit. Because a 6-year-old, what can a 6-year-old? And from what I read, and I hear Majed agreeing with me, so he probably knows this as well, is that the priests knew that there was a 2-year limit, and they did everything they could to prevent the children from, you know, telling their family.
Well, of course.
So they not only did the cover up, they did the crime, they did the cover up, and then they tried to get away with it by being sent to other parishes. I mean, the whole thing is sickening.
That's disgusting. How is it only 2 years?
Yeah. It gets even worse. Bill Donahue, who is the defender of the Catholic lead, basically decided to defend the priest by saying, if there's no penetration, there's no rape.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The Vatican, this very morning, as we're talking, basically finally issued a statement saying they feel shame and sorrow, and they vow to root out this tragic horror. And then they basically said they decided to forgive the priest right away because, quote, forgiveness is at the heart of Catholicism, along with absolution of sin that never needs to reach the planet's papers.
Yeah. That's why Satanists should take over, man.
It's like the third rail. If this was a Boy Scout organization, if it was a sports organization, the coaches or the leaders would be in jail so fast your head would swim. But all of this has happened over and over and over, and the priests are still walking around able to perpetuate, you know, this kind of sexual abuse. They've got to go to court and get thrown into jail.
I frankly don't understand somebody that can be Christian right now, or if you want to really pick hairs here, or Catholic. Because frankly, if, like you said, if this was any other kind of organization, a political club, a sports club, you would have resigned and, you know, you would have given back your membership in disgust. It was said, there's no way in hell I'm going to be part of these shenanigans.
Exactly.
But yet the faithful are still filling in the churches. You know, it's like, what the hell's wrong with
this? And bringing their children.
And bringing their children.
And exactly. I'm just going to jump back to an earlier thing you mentioned. It is so disgusting when people perpetuate the idea that if someone didn't, like, rape you, then it's not abuse.
Yeah.
Like, that idea is so toxic and so, like, it's so many people in Christianity think it. Because, like,
there are no levels of harassment.
Well, yeah, no,
even if
like, they molest you, oh, they didn't put their penis in your vagina, it's not abuse. Mm. Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes me so mad.
Yeah. Of course, we could probably see in the next few weeks, months happening ahead, there's probably going to be some articles coming out saying how some hush money is being paid, mm-hmm. stuff being settled out of court.
I'm just going to jump here for a sec, but did you hear that they're wanting to release the names of everyone?
No, I did not hear that.
Yeah, they're wanting to make everybody's names public, like all the users.
I think they should.
Oh, yeah.
They should.
Especially because so many of these people aren't going to be actually prosecuted.
And,
like,
of course,
let everyone know.
You know full well that these priests are just going to be removed and then shipped out to probably South America somewhere. And put into
South America, because his kids there don't matter.
Yeah,
exactly. Ooh. Exactly. Or Africa. Somewhere.
Ooh, that sends chills down my spine. Shit.
Yeah.
This is exactly. Remember that when we went to see that movie?
Yeah. Spotlight.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the movie Spotlight, I really, really highly recommend that.
This is Spotlight 2.0.
It is. It really is. It's the continuation, right? Except it's in Pennsylvania, and said that one was in Boston. Mm-hmm. So it's disgusting.
Do you happen to remember what happened? Did any of those priests actually get put into jail, or were they shipped out?
They were shipped out.
They were shipped
out. If I remember correctly. Yeah, most of them were shipped out. Usually the Vatican's really quick at moving in and, okay, you're packing your bags and going now, before the authorities can actually come in.
You know what's funny? I have a sister who goes to a Catholic church, and she has problems with Disney because she thinks they
sexualize. They're promoting gay agenda. Yeah.
But, well, not the gay agenda. She thinks, like, they're, like, promoting, like, pedophilia. She's weird about that. But then she's going to a Catholic church. And I'm like, are you insane? Like, what is going through your mind?
Oh, I think my mouse is like this.
I know.
Well, I read that that Pope Frank, you know, has condemned this, but they don't move in any other direction. They issue the condemnation.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
words
what's
are
the
meaningless
next step,
if actions don't follow.
Exactly.
And they need to take some action against this. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Exactly.
Allow them to get married.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they will realize in the future, then, you know, one of the biggest problems these religions have always done is forcing celibacy. It's like, you know, allow these priests to get married and have some normal dates and wives and stuff like that. You might eliminate the problem altogether.
I don't think it's celibacy per se, but like the sexual culture, the way they like push back on sexual freedom and how people should behave, like, and this abstinence thing just pushed people to their limits. And then I think the other part of it is how the Catholic churches operate on absolute power.
Yeah.
And this is where absolute corruption kicks in, and they do what they want to do, and they get away with it.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree. Perfect. Well, enough of the bad news and all that. let's talk about what we're here to do today. So I brought Ahmed and Majed because both you guys have some past. In the past, you used to live in Egypt. You're both Egyptian by birth. Now you're Canadians, of course. And you guys have way more experience about the culture and how people react and how people feel in the Middle East. And we do. We don't. I mean, I have no idea. So I thought that you guys could act as our experts and our guides in the situation. So I guess maybe I should start by asking, how do you guys feel about the whole situation, the whole thing that's been going on, the spat between Canada and Saudi Arabia?
You want to go first, Majid?
Yeah, go ahead, Ahmed.
You want to go?
All right. They're truly Canadian. Oh,
that's truly Canadian right there. That's, you cannot be more Canadian than that.
Proof of citizenship right there.
I'll go. I think Saudi Arabia is just a big bully. That's what she is. And I think that Bin Salman is he's doing what he wants to do. he tries to put that front of being progressive and trying to change things. But the truth is, he's still operating on the same old no criticism allowed and whatnot. And then when he violates all those, or the kingdom violates all those human rights ideals, if you will. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want anyone to be talking about it. He doesn't want any other country to be pushing around. And I believe that he picked on Canada for that reason. He doesn't have a lot to lose with exactly. with the trade deals and whatnot. Yeah. There's not a lot of things. Like, there's, I think on the news there was like $4 billion of trade between Canada and Saudi Arabia. So for Saudi Arabia, it's not really a huge deal.
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, the funny thing is, it's not even a big deal for us either.
I know, but that's why he chose, like, he picked up on Canada, because it's easy to set an example with a country that you don't have a lot of interests with. So it's easy to set up an example for everybody else that I have zero tolerance for criticism. Mm-hmm. And I would go apeshit if you just slightly criticize anything we do in public. And he's, I think he's following Trump's foreign policy doctrine in this. Like, I really don't think this would have happened if Trump wasn't in the White House.
Do you think because he thinks that Trump's not going to say anything, that automatically gives him permission?
Well, first, yeah, because the relationship between Canada and USA at the moment is not as its strongest level.
That's right.
And probably Trump is probably happy about what's going on. He probably maybe even he maybe even called Salman and told him, yeah, show this Trudeau. Yeah. Show that son of a bitch.
Show that Trudeau in his nice yeah. hair what to do.
And it falls right within what Trump is doing with other countries. Like, look at what he's doing to Turkey at the moment. He's doing the exact same yeah. thing to Turkey, mm-hmm. Just over the matter of one American citizen
that
he wants to get released.
For we know what you're talking about, but for the benefit of the audience, you want to briefly explain what's going on with Turkey?
Okay, I didn't want to
very briefly.
I've heard the subject, but so Turkey has been having some problems economically for the last year or two, but there is an American priest that's been living in Turkey for the last 23 years, and in the last coup attempt to throw out Erdogan in Turkey, he arrested thousands of people, including that
including the priest,
the priest, accusing him of being a spy. Mm-hmm. And he was handling some communication between Golan, who is the Turkish guy, Erdogan's opponent, who's living in the States as an asylum state. And he was this Golan guy is the one who coordinated the coup in Turkey, and Erdogan wants him. So he captured the priest, and he's willing to exchange the priest with Golan. So he told him, I'll give you the priest, you give me Golan, and that's the deal. But Trump said, no, you'll give me the priest for nothing, absolutely nothing at all. And Erdogan said no, so he said okay. So he imposed all these tariff sanctions on Turkey,
yeah.
over 50% on steel and all other Turkish exports to the States. And it caused the Turkish lira to go on a downward spiral.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of foreign policy doctrine that he is setting up.
Yes.
If for the slightest things, he can go absolutely bananas, and he go to the extremes. There's no middle diplomacy. He just goes straight to the extreme.
Yeah, you can.
I'll just destroy you if you don't give me this simple thing. I'll destroy you.
This is why I'm puzzled by this, because although it's only $4 billion to them, it's also 0.2% for us. Which, you know, he went extreme, but the fact that he's pulling the students to sell. Students away from it. He's hurting his people way more than he's hurting us.
No, he doesn't care about the students. He's treating them like...
He does.
He's throwing a temper tantrum like a child.
Yeah, and I think he's treating them like they are cattle, basically. He's bringing them back to the barn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always like a chess board, people are chess pieces, and he does what he wants.
Yes.
But that's the way he is back home, right? Like, Saudi kings, they treat themselves as gods. They do what they want, they can get away with it. And, I think it's gonna be interesting to see that Canadian deal as well with that we signed in back in 2016 with those tanks that we're selling to Saudi Arabia. They say it's like $15 billion worth of worth of
14.8 billion. Yes.
How much? 14.8. There you go. And I mean, well, it's really interesting how the government will go about this, because liberals were not so happy with it, but they allowed it anyway. And now, will that be like backfiring at us or not? That's also something that it's all over the news and people are talking about.
I think the public in general was not all that happy about it either.
Yeah, there was an investigation that was done about it last year, because there was some criticism to the Trudeau government for allowing these tanks to be exported to Saudi. Mm-hmm. And so they've made an investigation, and they declared that there was no evidence that the tanks we're selling to them has been used in the war crimes in Yemen. So they know that Saudi is committing war crimes in Yemen.
Oh, for sure.
But they just said that the investigation said that our tanks weren't used.
Oh, yeah. That's to kind of give yourself but a nice, clear conscience, right?
At the same time, they wouldn't release the report of the investigation. They just declared this is the conclusion. That's the abstract of it. But they didn't want to release the details of
it. Yeah, I'm sure somebody...
For some reason. But after that, Freeland, the Minister of Foreign Affairs... She initiated this bill C-47, and what she wants to do is to amend some acts so that she would have more leverage to cancel the export permits of weapons and tanks to any country that's proven to be committing war crimes. So she wants to expand her authority to freeze these kind of deals. And to me, that means that there was something in the report that they didn't like.
Yeah, of course.
But it was embarrassing, because they know that they are not going to be able to actually stop the deal, because it's been signed and they have to honor it. But they're trying to give themselves more authority to stop these kind of deals in the future.
It's not like they have Mohammed somewhere in Saudi Arabia saying, oh, okay, well, let's send these tanks. Oh, hold on a sec. These are Canadian tanks. No, we cannot send them to Yemen. Send them down south somewhere else instead. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
No. But gentlemen, both of you guys lived in Egypt for a good chunk of your life. Maybe I'll start with you, Majed, there.
Sure.
For the average Egyptian, you tell me, how does the average Egyptian feel about their neighbors, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia?
That's an interesting question, Kev. Yeah. Well, I've been always on a different side when it comes to political views and political sides, so I won't be representing an average Egyptian, to be honest.
But I would say that
there is a huge division, in my opinion, between the Egyptian people when it comes to Saudi Arabia. Some people look at it as a sacred place, and some other people see the Saudis as manipulative and bullies and just making just doing their best to get the best out of other nations, serving them, if you will.
Yeah.
So the kingdom's stances right now have been changing. A lot of things have been changing lately within the Saudi government and the way they think, the way they behave. And some radical Egyptians, and I would say more religious people, would look at this with an eye roll, if you will. And others will see that this is progressive and going well. For me, Saudi Arabia is, well, it's not the best place to be. It's not a very good.
I call it the dark.
I don't know what to say, man. Every single word that comes to mind is not appropriate, to be honest.
I think you said plenty right there, because it's very clear, like you said, if half the population think it's a sacred place, and people are divided along religious lines, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know if it's half. It's very hard to get any statistics from Egypt.
Yeah. Okay, well,
because there isn't any.
Half is probably not the right percentage.
No.
Here, but I'm saying if people are divided, they're divided along religious lines.
Even among religious people, there are two main groups in Egypt. There is the Salafi groups. And these are the ones who would be looking at the Saudi Arabia as a sacred place and as a holy
reverence
place.
And
because the Salafi or the Wahhabi ideology is coming from there.
Uh-huh.
So all the religious clerics, the original ones for the Wahhabi movement, is from Saudi Arabia. But the other part of the religious groups in Egypt is the Muslim Brotherhood. And these look at the Saudi Arabia kingdom as being evil because Saudi Arabia is against the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then there are those who are neither Muslim Brotherhood fans nor Salafis. And these are also divided. Some of them look at the Saudi Arabia as a supporter of the current president and the supporter of sustaining the status quo of the Egyptian system government. Mm-hmm. And so they look at it as the kind of the big brother or the big sister who supports with money. And then there are those others who consider it as evil, but not from a religious point of view, but from a civic point of view.
Well, so, like intervening in our
yes.
That, politics.
Yeah, they are the source of the Salafi movement that kind of corrupted our corrupted part of our social fabric. They consider it as evil and intervening in our political movement as well. So yeah, I think there are four main point of views.
Wow,
where Egyptians are divided.
You have no idea how much I love this, Nancy. Can you imagine if Jim was here on top of this? I've been trying to find Jim because he's a lawyer in international trade and he's yes. Iranian, and
yeah.
I would love to have all three of you guys just chat this out, and I'm just going to sit in the corner and just have like
yeah, and Iranians love Saudis.
They do.
Jim, where are you, buddy? I'm trying to get a hold of you, man. It's like, oh God, that'd be F. You guys have blown my mind. Okay, gentlemen, let's say, for example, I'm making you guys co-prime ministers, both of you guys, of the country tomorrow morning, okay? Bang, bang. It's declared. Ahmed and Majed are in charge of the country when it comes to foreign trade and all this stuff. What should...
Which country?
Our country, Canada. Canada, of course. Canada.
Okay, our country, okay.
Jeez. Well, I can put you in charge of another country, you might not have that authority.
Sure.
What should our government, in your opinion, do in this situation?
No,
I think we should stand our ground.
Yeah, love this guy.
I think we should call on our allies to grow some balls and stand.
Yes,
I agree 100%.
Because
100%, man.
Yeah, because this silence is shameful, and it's all because of the money. Like the UK, for example, they are way bigger exporters of weapons and military armory to the Saudi Arabian than we are. And their weapons are used in Yemen. Actually, they are helping logistically with their army. The UK army is helping logistically the Saudis in their war in Yemen. So I think they are complicit in the war crimes that is going on over there.
Damn.
Yeah. So, but, you know, money always talks. And it's it's not going to be easy.
And I think it's ironic when a lot of countries go within, like, go to you to the human rights thingy there and say, okay, we should support this. We sign treaties and we are firm. We stand our grounds. And then when it comes to the real deal, when it comes to something that really happened, and someone that called Saudi's like bullshit out, and now we need this support. We need someone to say, well, yes, human rights should not be violated. This is a no-brainer. But no, they would shame away. So shame on them.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how much they're sold out to the Saudis. Ephraim, I'm not sure if you know this. A couple of years ago, the UN elected Saudi Arabia as a head of a women's rights council in the UN.
It's ridiculous.
So they are the head of women's rights commission mm-hmm. in the UN, and they were voted for it by many countries, including the UK.
Amazing.
So,
oh, yeah, hold on. Are you telling me that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is not very good when it comes to women's rights? Shocker, I tell you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't see that one coming.
No, and there were also there was a Saudi minister who was also appointed as a head of another commission that's also related to other aspects of human rights. So there are heads of two human rights commission in the UN. So that tells you everything. They're totally sold.
Come on, they just because they crucify a guy once in a while, like they did last week, last Wednesday, just because they crucify a guy doesn't mean they don't know human rights, right?
No.
And, Oh, by the way,
are we just other species of animals? It doesn't matter.
Yes, like Trump says, they're animals. They're not humans. And by the way, Samar Badawi, who has been arrested, she is actually an American citizen.
Oh,
so that's the irony. So we are standing up for a U.S. citizen, while the U.S.
does nothing.
Does nothing, but they're waging war over Turkey for the pastor. But because he's a Christian, actually Trump tweeted about him, says our amazing Christian pastor.
Or maybe, you know, maybe that's what she needs to do.
But Samar is just
she just needs to become a Christian.
Convert, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You bet.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Actually,
that would solve the problem.
As funny as this is, if I were her, I would actually just
not just
fake
Christian,
it.
But yeah, evangelical.
Yeah, yeah. I would totally just fake it and do it.
I had a vision of Jesus.
Yeah, that's right.
Jesus visited me. I was saved.
I could talk. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And if that worked,
it would. It undoniably 100% would work.
Probably not still though, because she's still a brown woman. Like
yeah, that's true.
But can you imagine her coming? Like if that all worked and she came back and be like, really?
But also, and evangelicals like rehabilitation cases.
Yeah,
they're a sucker for. Oh, this lesser person found
second
Jesus.
Chances. Yeah, they're suckers for that. Nancy, you get diplomatic contacts. Give me Washington.
you want Washington like on a
I'm sorry.
You want Trump's head on a plate?
I'm sorry. You get assassin. Not your assassin, Gil. I mean the real politician.
Diplomacy never worked for me. I just go straight for the weapons and get it over with. So.
Well, I hereby announce that I don't know Nancy and never met her.
Do you mean everything we said to each other last night is no longer valid? Oh, God.
Hey.
Oh. How can it be valid if it never existed?
Are you and Majid having some kind of pillow talk going on here? Whoa. About Trump.
That's a turn off.
No, that's a safe word.
Okay, so
end everything instantly.
Yeah.
Okay, so gentlemen, in conclusion, for the average Canadian that looks at this, is there something you'd recommend the average layperson do? Should we boycott Saudi Arabia products?
Like
should
what?
Oil. I don't know. Should we?
Actually, yes. I think he should. He should look for another oil source.
Okay. Should we? Would you recommend we write to our politicians and make them aware of our feelings as the average person?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, I believe we should do that.
I know that the oil argument is probably is a long and maybe for a different show argument. But although I'm totally on the liberal side, I would say I'm a more of a central left person. But anyways, although I think that the environment should be protected and everything, I actually am for that line that goes from Alberta,
the trans
or from the west to the east. Yes, I'm totally for it, and I think this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that line has nothing to do with our local
supply
oil supply. Yeah. It's this line is
to refinery.
But this line is to for us to be able to export oil to countries other than the U.S. The Alberta oil is not the same grade as the Saudi Arabia oil. It's much harder to refine.
Yeah, it's tar sand oil.
It's a different grade, and the Saudi oil is much easier to refine and it's much cheaper.
Yeah.
But they are not the only ones who sell it.
I love how you say different grade because I think of maple syrup. I was like, you just pour that over your pancake. It's a different grade.
Again.
It has a bit stronger flavor, this one.
But at the end, as we said before, the amount of trade is not significant. We're not going to be able to hurt them. They're not going to be able to hurt us economically. So we should escalate this on an international level as a human rights issue.
Yes, yes.
Like just make louder noise about it.
Which is
going to be a good PR stunt for Trudeau in his next election anyway.
Yes.
And I think that's why he was actually talking about it in the first place. It's PR.
It's
okay.
It would disgust me is I'm seeing conservative politicians right now, right away, and I said this in my rant last week, right away they're already trying to bend over for Saudi Arabia. They're already attacking Trudeau, saying, oh my God, I can't believe he's weak because he stood up to Saudi Arabia. How is that?
They literally tweeted a 9/11-esque picture at us.
Yeah.
But these were not Canadians.
No, the Saudi, yeah, the Saudi, yeah, there was, yeah. It was not the Saudi, it was not the government of Saudi Arabia either who tweeted that. It was a group of Saudi youth.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So we bombed Iraq.
Yeah. So let's bomb Iraq.
No, I think somebody should stand up to this. This new prince is trying to prove his new authority. He's trying to stand his ground. He's trying to show everybody that he's going to be tough. He's going to be ruthless. He's showing not only the other countries, he's also doing this for his internal PR show, because he's trying to establish his new powers. Mm-hmm. He's still young. He doesn't have everybody's loyalty inside of the kingdom. So he's just trying to show himself off as a ruthless, lunatic, crazy, who's gonna do whatever it takes to win. And somebody should stand up to this.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen. I really, really appreciate you coming on to explain that to us. Majed, you're always welcome back, my friend. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Kev. I appreciate it.
And thank you so much for this. And Majed, if people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
They can definitely go forward with my Facebook page. Not page, my Facebook profile, basically. It's Majed Solomon. They will search. I actually don't know what's the extension of that guy. Solomon, find my picture. I don't know.
Send me a message. I'll pass you on. Send me a picture. I'll pass you on.
Sweet. Thanks, man.
Majed, my friend from Calgary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kev. Thank you so much, everybody. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure
having
talking
you here. We got to do this again on a regular basis.
Well, I think we'll do it. We must find Jem, and when we do, we'll bring him on board and bring you guys back. And this will be nothing but that. It'll be a fantastic.
It'll be an awesome threesome.
An awesome threesome. I love it.
It's a difficult, complex question, and it's good to have experts that aren't filtered by the media in any particular way to come on and explain it in ways we can understand. So thank you for that.
All right.
Well, thank you. I don't think I'm an expert. I'm just a man with opinion.
Good enough, my friend. All right, and that was Majed, our friend Majed Suleiman. Oh, I always love to have Majed on. I love the way that guy talks. He's like Hugh and he just says something out of the blue, and it's hilarious. Okay, Ahmed, you sticking with us for the rest of the show?
I believe so.
Perfect.
Hopefully. If you don't kick me out.
Great conversation. It's just, there's just so much that we really don't know in terms of the background and how people feel, and that just fills in so many gaps. Great. Great way to have our program start off today.
Yeah, exactly. All right, it's time to do another brilliant moment brought to you by religion.
All right. So first up, guys, I know what's wrong with the people that oppose Trump.
You do?
I found the problem.
You found the problem.
Or somebody did. They're suffering from Trump derangement syndrome and are in need of an exorcism.
I love this.
At last,
the solution to
At
that
last,
problem.
A religious answer to a problem that doesn't exist. At last.
At least they are, according to religious right activist and former Colorado State Legislator Gordon Klingenschmidt.
Oh, that guy. Whoa.
Klingenschmidt.
I know, he's got that weird name. Right?
It just reminds me of Hogan's Heroes. Klingenschmidt.
I know nothing. Nothing.
As Klingenschmidt sees it, President Trump is being used by God, and those who oppose him must be controlled by demons.
Definitely.
I'm sure those who suffer from Trump derangement syndrome look at the president and say, he must be demonized, because he makes me feel so anxious inside, Klingenschmidt explained. But again, these are people who are deranged. So are they properly discerning the evil spirit inside of President Trump?
So hold on a sec. So you're saying the deranged people think that Trump is deranged, and because they think Trump is deranged, that makes them deranged?
Yes, and because of demons.
Because of demons.
Because they have demons inside them that are making any anxiety and any bad feelings, making them feel that towards Trump.
Is he engaged to the swooshy lady?
I don't think the demons are inside him. I think the demon is in the form of his wig.
The hair. Exactly.
The Photoshop blur of hair.
The demon on top of his head.
Did you ever see the gag when they do the Simpsons and he wakes up from the bed and he's bald and there's a dog that sits like a Shih Tzu that sits on his head and just turns around and makes it and makes the hair.
That's it. That's the demon.
That was amazing.
It's a demon dog.
Because of their derangement, because of the demons inside them, they project their anxiety onto someone else who might be causing their anxiety. But it's not inside the president. If anything, he might be influenced by the spirit of God sometimes. The demon is inside of those who welcome this fear and this anxiety.
So if you feel anxiety, you're possessed.
Oh.
Sorry, guys, I'm possessed then.
So that's how many people in the world?
Everyone.
Exactly.
We're all demon-possessed.
I'm okay with that.
So demons have way more fun anyway.
Exactly. So if God didn't give you a spirit of fear and anxiety and derangement, but you're feeling the spirit of fear and anxiety and derangement inside of you, is that coming from God, he asked? No, it's coming from the devil and the demonic spirit of fear inside of these people who have Trump derangement syndrome, and they may require an exorcism.
Well, hold on a sec. Doesn't the Bible say fear the Lord all the time?
But if don't God be doesn't give you that anxious of the Lord.
Okay, so be afraid, but not in an anxious way.
Exactly.
So be afraid, but glad to be afraid. Oh. I'm so happy I'm afraid of God now.
Yep.
Well, wait a minute. Do I detect a good business opportunity here to go into the exorcism business?
Exorcism / pharmaceuticals.
Exactly.
Love that.
To rid these people of the Trump derangement. Because I don't see at the present time that there are enough exorcists to meet the need. So I'm thinking we better get our t-shirts and our swooshy lady.
Yes.
Exorcism in a bottle.
Scabbard ready.
Exactly. Yeah. That'll be the brand name of the new anxiety medication, Exorcism.
Want to go into business, Ahmed?
I can bring some Arabic spells.
Ah, yes. Add it to our list of business opportunities here, Kevin.
Of course.
With making board games.
Yes, absolutely.
I think this might be a franchise.
And I guess we all get Shih Tzus because of...
I have two.
Oh, wonderful. We're ready to roll.
Already going on
this thing.
There we go.
Get that Trump-mobile ready. We're off.
All right. So moving on. You guys know how some school dress codes are kind of really weird or really dumb or really stupid and they just kind of don't make sense?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
I love how the women are like, yes, and the guys are like, yes.
Particularly because they're usually targeting women.
I actually went to Catholic school. I actually had to wear the dress code and the uniform and the little tie and everything.
Believe it or not, me too.
Oh, you do?
I was in a Catholic school in Egypt.
You were in a Catholic school in Egypt?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
All my school years, from kindergarten to
You're
high
kidding
school.
Me. Yep. You told me some kind of Muslim school in Egypt. I would have said yes, but Catholic school?
It's Catholic school for everybody. It's for Muslims and for Christians.
Wow. Wow. So
actually, the majority of the Christians in the school were Orthodox, not Catholic. But it's part of the Frère de la Salle, who is a French guy.
Oh, cool.
He's a French priest. Yeah, they have schools all over the world.
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty good school. It's amazing.
Sorry for interrupting you, dear.
No worries.
It was different from Catholic schools over here. It's not as vicious.
So, a fundamentalist Christian school in Florida has denied admission to a 6-year-old boy because he had dreadlocks. Proving once again that rigid biblical principles encourage discrimination and closed-mindedness.
He's got dreadlocks, man.
Yeah.
He's evil. He's six.
Books Christian
Close to
Academy.
666, one third already.
But to have a mistress, you get a mulligan for that. Yeah. If you're in the White House.
Exactly. A small private school turned the first grader away on the first day of classes due to his haircut. According to his father, Clinton Stanley Sr., the school's administrator, however, defended the move, saying that it's a standard Christian school rule, and it hasn't kept other black children from enrolling there.
Oh, so it's just the hair they have a problem with.
Yeah, it's just the hair.
Oh, thank goodness,
They have dress code. They have, like, a code to go with the hair as well.
What is it, like, you have to have, like, buzz cut? Like,
I don't know.
Like, what hair rule would exclude dreadlocks?
I see Ahmed with dreadlocks.
Oh, I'm sure it has to do with hair above the collar.
I imagine something along those lines, yeah.
And so forth. So it's really easy to stick that we don't want black kids with dreadlocks in our school.
To kind of direct how you
want. Because, you know, you see kids with long dreads, you know, you might confuse them for a girl all of a sudden, right? God knows.
And he says, I respect their rules, but it's not right, said Clinton Stanley, a senior. Allow kids to come as they are. You are a Christian school. In the Bible, it says, come as you are, he added.
Yeah.
You deny a kid education on his hair? Stanley used his cell phone to film his reaction as he took his son, dressed in the school uniform of navy pants, a button-down shirt, and tie, to the campus and was told the boy could not go to class without first getting a haircut. His video, posted on Facebook early Monday, has been viewed about 78,000 times and has prompted thousands of comments, many supportive, but some also noting such hair rules are common in private religious schools or questioning why he chose the school. The rule is especially interesting because Jesus himself is often depicted with long hair.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And Leviticus actually warns men against cutting their hair too much.
That is interesting.
Well, it's interesting because it is a private school, and they, I believe, have a right to do that. However, it is discriminatory. I mean, it may end up in the courts.
Do you think there's maybe a reason here because dreads are associated with Rastafarians? And it is a competing religion in a way, right?
And I mean, if you see the picture of this little boy, like, it's not like crazy wild anything like that. And they're not even ridiculously long. I think they come because, I mean, he's so young. He's only six. They only come to they come above his shoulders. So they're not like crazy long flowing dreads.
Well, congratulations, school of whatever idiocy you guys are. You just taught a 6-year old what discrimination is right away.
I honestly think the 6-year old might have already experienced discrimination.
I would imagine that
that's America.
When his parents, braided the dreadlocks, he thought he looked cool. The parents approved. He thought he was great going to school on the first day.
And I've seen the picture of the kid. He looks great.
Yeah.
He's caught up in something that he has no idea what's going on. Yeah. All he knows is for some reason he's not acceptable in this new school that he had a lot of hopes about making new friends and so forth. So it's all about the parents and and the school at this point.
And I mean, to deny him education on the first day of school, that's literally like sending a girl home for having her bra straps showing. Sure, her education is important because, oh my God, you can see her shoulders.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, to be devil's advocate, I wonder whether or not the parents do have an agenda at this point to highlight the fact that the school does not allow this, because they had to be aware that in a private Christian school, dreadlocks were not the ordinary.
Yeah, I imagine they would have had the dress code.
Yeah, hair code, or not hair code.
Well, message to the parents. So solve all that. Just send your kid to a public school. That's it.
The only problem is some public schools in the States are horrendous. Because American education system is
bottom. I like to sometimes I project Canadian.
Canadian education public schools are really good, most of them.
Yeah.
But American public schools are deteriorating and falling apart.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, thank you, ladies. Certainly appreciate that. So let's take a quick pause, and when we come back, I'm gonna pull out my rifle here, and we'll be talking to Eli Bosnick. So stay with us.
Steady arm, Kevin.
In a world torn apart by a lack of reason.
Or lease.
And I think it should be religion treated with ridicule and hatred and contempt. And I claim that right.
In the morning.
Hi, everybody. This is Robert Stanley from the Right to Reason podcast. And if you subscribe now, you'll get free.
Learn more about the broadcast at therighttoreason.com.
All right, so we have a really special guest coming up, but my dear Nancy, I'm sorry I have to do this to
you. What is it? Oh,
tranquilizer darts. I'm sorry, dear. Girls, get her. Get her.
You get the arm. I'll get the legs.
Okay. Oh,
ow, she's biting me. Get the duct tape. Perfect. Good. Ow. Okay. Everybody okay?
I got a few claw marks on my arm.
She bit me.
It's that kung fu grip of hers.
My arm, guys. I think we need to take out her dentures.
I'm sorry, Nancy.
We just had to do that.
I'm really, really sorry. But it's for your own good and it's for international relations. I'm so sorry. Okay. Now that that is done, we can bring in our guests. Ladies and gentlemen, for the very first time in the history of Canadian podcasts, and maybe a podcast anywhere, I'd like to introduce to you, ladies and gentlemen, the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Alex. It's terrible you got kicked off YouTube. I want to say right now, I think it's a terrible thing they did. They shouldn't have kicked you off YouTube. They shouldn't have kicked you off Facebook. I'm going to talk to Zuckerberg. You probably shouldn't have called him a dirty Jew, but I'm going to have words. I'm going to tell you right now, Alex. I'm going to do my very best.
I certainly appreciate that, Mr. President, and we really thank you for being here, especially for the benefit of both our countries. Mr. Trump, we all know that you have a vast intellect, and I thought maybe for our audience, you would love to participate with us in a little pop quiz.
A pop quiz? I love it. I'm the best at pop quizzes. I take all the pop quizzes, I pop them every time. Now I'm going to need a needle and a donkey and 3 balloons. I did this at Eric's 4th birthday party. It went so well. I mean, Eric cried the whole time, but I forget he's my son sometimes. So what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? I'm ready. So just give me a needle and a thread.
Perfect. Now, this is based on a little podcast show that we love called Citation Needed. And
it's wonderful little podcast. That sounds like not a lot of people listen to it.
No, well, you know, it's actually quite a good podcast. I encourage a lot of people to listen to it. Maybe you should give it a try, Mr. President. Question the first. Now, we all know that for the President of the United States, security is a big, big issue. Now, the Secret Service does have code names. And, of course, the safety of the First Lady is of prime importance.
Oh, absolutely. Super care about... oh, God, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Melania. God.
Right, absolutely, right, Malala. Right. So, she got shot in that face by the Taliban then. You guys see that episode of The Flintstones? It was weird.
Yes, it was very weird.
Anyway, security for Malala.
The code name for Melania from the Secret Service, is it A, Lady Marmalade? Is it B, Escape Shawshank Skank? Is it C, Really Don't Care Bear? Or is it D, The Other White Meat?
Okay, so I know it's not D because that's what I call her. That's a little fun thing between us. I know it's not B because that's what Antifa yells at her. I'm going to go with A. Is it A?
It is A, of course.
I got it right, 100% correct.
Fantastic.
I'm tweeting about this right now. According to recent polls, I am 100% correct.
Absolutely.
100% of the time. Sent.
No.
Sorry. You were saying, Alex?
Of course. Now, of course, we all know that you have a trade war going on with Canada.
It's a terrible thing that Canada's doing to us. I don't know if you know this, but their prime minister over there, he cheated. We were having an arm wrestle, and he cheated. He used his other hand the same time. And I told Mike that he's lucky because I was going to use my karate. Yeah? Because Benny Nahu showed me some stuff. Oh. I was going to go Krav Maga. Krav Maga. You see these moves? Yes. I don't know if my camera's like, come on, Maga. Krav Maga.
Well,
Maga.
Why? Well, the public might not know why the President of the United States declared a trade war with Canada. Was it A, because you had stomach indigestion due to a poutine? Was it B, because you were jealous of Justin Trudeau's hair? Was it C, because there's a tape of a Canadian prostitute with maple syrup? Or was it D, because the hungry look Ivanka gave to Justin?
I'm definitely going to go with D. It's the hungry look Ivanka gave to Justin. I just want to say right now, it was very inappropriate. And the prostitute with the maple syrup, that was just a nice welcoming gift. The fact that Justin didn't take me up on it, that's his business, not mine.
I totally agree, Mr. President. Okay, third and final question. You're doing fantastic so far. We are basking in the glow of your intellect, sir.
Thank you.
Donald Trump has, of course, he's doing a fantastic job as president. He also needs some relaxed time. He needs to relax. He needs to have a couple pastime hobbies. What are Donald Trump's hobbies? A, does he like to enjoy Kim Jong Udon noodles? B, does he like to listen to Ra Ra Rasputin by Boney M? C, does he have stormy discussion in the Oval Office? Or D, does he like to ignore Puerto Rico culture altogether?
Oh, it's that last one. It's that last one. I don't want to play that board game. Everyone always keeps saying, oh, we should play that board game. Play that board game. That board game lost all its power. It's boring. I don't want to play that board game.
Fantastic. Mr. President, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and being with us today. I know you're a very busy man. I know your time is limited. So we will let you go, and hopefully our countries can establish better relations in the future.
Thank you. I love it when countries rub together.
And that was the 45th president of the United States. In case you didn't know who actually that was, of course, our friend, Eli Bosnick. Eli, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God. I had a hard time going through the questions. Yes. I thought my answers were funny, but you just trumped me nonetheless.
They were fantastic. I had to mute myself while you were reading.
Eli, this is the third time on our show. We always love to have you, and you, of course, south of the 49th, and worldwide now, you're very well known, but you might not be as well known up here, up to the 49th. Maybe you'll give us a quick bio as to who Eli Bosnick is.
So I'm a podcaster and comedian. I have three shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, Citation Needed, and The Skeptocrat. And if you thought to yourself, that's four shows, another thing about me is I'm not very good at math, so there you go. Shared a few things today.
Eli, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today, but I wanted to turn the conversation a bit more serious. I want to talk about comedy, because you're probably one of the funniest guys I know by far, and I love the work you do with the other guys from Puzzle and a Thunderstorm. And if you guys have not listened to his shows, you absolutely must. It's an absolute must. I listen to their shows actually more than I listen to my own. And Eli, I wanted to talk today about comedy because it seems to me like especially in the current political landscape that we have, comedy has become almost a vital thing. Would you say?
Absolutely, and it gets. Underrated how powerful comedy is and how important it is. And we sort of in the post Daily Show era take for granted the idea that like comedy can speak truth to power. But pre Jon Stewart, and I can't really speak to the Daily Show right now. I don't really watch it, but pre Jon Stewart, we didn't have outlets like that. And Stewart, while he kind of gets ignored, I mean, we all know he was funny and we all know the Daily Show was great, really opened the door to a level of political commentary that is carried on by people like John Oliver today and that we try to do even a little bit on our shows.
Yeah, that was my next follow-up question. You really think this for lack of a better term, maybe this revolution in comedy and speaking a word to power actually started with the Daily Show?
Yeah, I mean, I think it didn't start with The Daily Show. I mean, you can trace it back to Lenny Bruce and, you know, George Carlin and those guys. But as far as entering the mainstream, I think that Jon Stewart really doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. Mm-hmm. I think he opened it up to the idea. I think he opened a lot of shows up to the idea that, hey, you can be a full-time news show. And obviously, it's based on a Saturday Night Live bit. But you can be a full-time news show promoting the show, reporting the news in a way that's funny and in a way that educates people at the same time. And I think it is absolutely vital for us to acknowledge that the show that came on just after South Park created a generation of educated voters and consumers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But isn't it an odd thing? Because you're a comedian, and I'm assuming here, you'll be able to tell me, that when you decide to go into comedy, you didn't decide to do this to be political.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because I'm very lucky in that I come in a post-Jon Stewart, George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Andy Kaufman world. And so it's a lot easier for me to have seen a path where I'd have to be speaking about the real world than it probably was for comics before me. You know, one of the
comedian's careers that I think is really interesting to watch is Patton Oswalt. He's sort of the creator of the alt comedy scene, and he flies a little bit under the radar in much the same way that Stewart does, as just like a super funny guy. But if you watch the formation of Oswalt's career from, you know, Werewolves and Silly Putty all the way up to Annihilation today, it is about comedy that no longer becomes about observation and becomes about change. And I think that's a great goal for us to strive for, even if we don't always hit it as performers.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So now, of course, comedians have become a bit like the guardians of the moral conscience of the public. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, and I mean, I do want to say here, because some people are going to be like, hey, dude, have you ever heard of Pagliacci? And it's true, like, comedy and the fool and the jester have always stood that role sort of throughout time, is that they're the ones who can speak truth to power. But I think now, especially as I will say the United States is experiencing sort of a breakdown of their flawed system for the first time in this generation's political memory, that becomes all the more important. Yeah, that people pick up that people pick up that mantle. I don't think it's a new thing by any means, but I do think it's an important one.
I really think that the way we're going to get through this is a combination of comedians and investigative journalism and the free press. I think those are the two release valves that tell us that sanity still exists, and somehow we're going to right this ship, which at this point is taking on too much water and you know, drowning the truth in fake news. So I'm happy that you're talking about truth to power, because I think you've really nailed what's important, especially at this rotten political time.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Eli, as a comedian who's obviously on the forefront of all these battles, what do you feel United States of America need to do to get back to a state where they were before, you know, where the Walter Cronkites could be actually, without calling them fake news, well, you know, where you could actually trust your local news source? What do you think needs to be done?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I don't think I'm on the forefront of it in the same way that people like Trevor Noah and certain other more prominent comedians are. But I am in the tiny corner of the world that I inhabit. And honestly, I think one thing that is important, and this is going to seem slightly like a dodge, is to understand that this is not the first time this has happened to my country. This is not the first time this has happened in the United States. It's bad. It's really, really bad, and we can care about it and we can fight against it. But like the post-80s, you know, backlash that took the form of Ronald Reagan is essentially what we're going through again. We're going through a dumber post-MTV2 Jersey Shore family reunion version of it, but it's not new for, you know, several years of progressivism to be followed by a weird right-wing regressive backlash. And I think as comedians and just as American citizens, although you're not, but I think internationally as well, it's important for us to remember that, like, the world isn't going to come crashing down, especially if we're, you know, vigilant and we're fighting and we're working hard. There are good things that can still be done within bad structures, especially when there are bad people at the top. And the only reason I mention it is that because I think it's easy when we're in frameworks like this and when we're in historical moments like this, it's very easy to feel helpless, right? It's very easy to feel sort of lost. But the small changes that you can make as a person, the small kindnesses you can do, the small charities that you can create in your life, the things that you can do to make the world a better place, those are still there, and they're still very concrete. And I think it's important over this next couple of years, or however long he lasts in office, for us not to forget that it is important to fight, that it is important to keep on message and not to get weighed down under this torrent of bullshit and new scandals, but at the same time, to recognize that what you do here and now is enough and is okay, is good, even if you don't change the whole world with what you do.
Do you think that we've somehow changed the world in that sense, that maybe the comic now has replaced the journalist in a way? Do you think it's going to be the new norm even after things come back down from Trump and Stan?
I don't think so. I don't think it's the new norm. I think that, you know, the world will settle, as things always do. You know, whoever replaces Trump, and I do think he's going to lose in 2020, and I think he'll lose to a relatively sort of centrist Democrat in my country. It's just sort of the way things tend to balance out, and I think things will go back to relative normalcy in the way that we saw with, you know, Obama after, you know, Bush Jr., etc. I think what might change, and certainly what I hope changes, is the participation in local government elections that America has been lacking. I think we might gain, not just in this year, in our coming election up in November, but I think that my generation, my generation has learned the importance of every single vote, of every single election over these last couple of years. And I think that will make our entire ruling system not perfect, but better.
I certainly hope you're right. You know, the late, great Christopher Hitchens used to say that laughter was the beginning of emancipation. Is there anything as a comedian you see today you wish a topic that we should tackle even more?
Yeah, I mean, I want us to be able... So this is going to speak to a slightly different direction. I want the left, and I know that's such a broad term and it gets abused and abused. I want the left and liberals and left-leaning people to feel free to laugh at ourselves a bit more. You know, we're facing such a bad dude. We're facing such a series of bad dudes that it's hard sometimes to remember that we have our own silly, that we have our own foibles, and that we're going to make mistakes, that we're going to be foolish, and we're going to act foolish, we're going to say foolish things, and to laugh at ourselves, to know when we're wrong, and to accept it and move forward from it, I think is going to be a vital tool when we get back into power. Because if we don't, if we're not as willing to mock ourselves and laugh at ourselves and check in and see what we are doing when we gain that power back, I'm not going to say we'd be just as bad as the other side because we're not white supremacists marching through the streets of Charlottesville trying to murder people, but we are capable of forgetting the people that become disenfranchised when we're in power and seeing another backlash. So, I mean, that, I guess the very, very long answer I'm giving is the thing I want us to laugh at more is ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, you come to the right show because the show is called Left in the Valley and they laugh at you all the time.
As I said before, I really think that comedy and comedians do help us save our sanity in so many ways because when something makes us laugh, it also releases a lot of tension. It lets fresh air in. It makes people vulnerable, and vulnerable in a way that they can say, you know, this really isn't so bad. Maybe I can see the humor. Maybe I can see some optimism in this. And I think it's easier for people to move forward, whether they're laughing at a political comedian or they're watching Bugs Bunny. It really doesn't make any difference. I think, and you can tell me whether or not you agree with me on this, Eli. I think it just allows that moment of, there's something in the world that can make me laugh, so all is not as bad as it appears. And it's vital that we experience that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I totally feel a connection between you and Eli, Nancy. Yeah. You know, it's a Jewish thing. You might not know, Eli, Nancy is actually the Wandering Jew of legend.
Oh, you found a Canadian Jew.
No, she used to be American, but now she's Canadian. She decided to...
You had to import one. You didn't have a homegrown one. So you had to import one. I get it. Yeah. It happens.
That's why he keeps me on the show. I'm old and I'm Jewish, so I take up a lot of token, you know, places.
Jew on my show. I get it, Nancy. You and me, we're filling out demographic cards on our shows.
I think I want to see somebody Photoshop a Freudian couch with Eli Bosnick as being the psychiatrist. You know, my psychiatrist is Eli Bosnick, and put that on a button somewhere. I think
Eli and I do share, because Jewish humor has been the soul in many ways of Judaism, because it's been in moments of the greatest tragedy and greatest upheaval that Jews have managed to work in a joke, have managed to laugh at themselves. I mean, I think it's something intrinsic, and it does help to get through the day, the minute, the week, and think, okay, we're laughing at ourselves. What can be so terrible?
I think that's a good question to ask Eli. Eli, do you think your cultural heritage informs a lot of your comedy?
Oh, absolutely. I think she's spot on. I mean, you know, Jewish humor is its own category of humor. You know, that what sort of stand-ups and formal comedians call street jokes, so many of them are just Jewish things. I mean, Nancy, I can't speak to your experience, but like when I was growing up, me and my dad would just back and forth with street jokes, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. If you sit around with Jews and go like, all right, let's hear some jokes, they have like 20. And not that non-Jews don't know jokes or aren't very funny. I mean, some of the best comedians ever have been non-Jews, but it isn't integral to the culture in the same way that it is with Jews. It's not integral to the art, to the literature, to the poetry, to the music. I mean, there is humor infused into everything culturally Jewish, from prayer services all the way to some of our most serious works of literature. There's always that undercurrent of humor.
Okay. Oh, absolutely. In our family, it wasn't who was the brightest or who had the most information. It was who gave the best one-liner spontaneously, you know, in any gathering or you know, or who was the funniest and who made us laugh the longest and the hardest. So Eli and I could easily switch places and feel at home in each other's family. There's just no doubt about it.
And that's the other thing too, is it is an appropriated family for a lot of our culture. You know, being Jewish, and this is something that, you know, as atheists, I don't think we get to talk about quite enough, but being Jewish is communal in a way that is hard to explain to non-Jews, because there is such a history of being separated, of being murdered, of having to escape to new places and make your way on your own. I mean, I don't know a lot of Jews who immigrated to America who's came with their whole family. I mean, my great-grandfather used to tell us this story about how he, you know, got on the boat, his family pooled all their money, he got on the boat and he had to sleep on the straw, and they didn't give them any food, so he started to eat the straw. And when he told this story to me as a little kid, I cried, because it was just horrible, the thought of my great-grandfather eating straw to survive. And he goes, no, it tasted like chop suey, it was delicious. Oh, I want that straw again, let me tell you, it's so delicious, right? And so from tragedy is born comedy, and that's carried down, you know, generation to generation to generation to us.
Okay, I'm going to pause here for a second because Christina just walked in. Hi, Christina.
Hello.
Hey! We've been waiting for you.
We were talking about the Holocaust.
I know. the best subject.
Not that you had anything to do with that, Christina. Don't worry about it.
No.
It's not about you.
No. That was Nancy, not me.
Nancy. Yeah, she was there for everything.
Yep.
All right, so let's keep going the recording. You want to go and ask a question while you're there?
What? No. I'll just listen.
Let's all just wait until she has a question. Like, let's just get super quiet.
Let's put you on the spot.
It's all on you, Christina.
We're mad. I just want you to know we're mad. Like, it's not a big deal.
How did you like Nanette on Netflix? There, my question.
What the hell is that?
Okay, so here's the thing about Nanette. Nanette was an incredibly powerful artistic experience for a lot of people, and she spoke about an experience that I don't share. She spoke about queerness and being a woman and being a victim and being an outsider, which are experiences that as a white, straight-looking, you know, dude in a psy relationship, I can't fathom. And yet, at the very end, she speaks to something that I think is very close to me, which is comedy. And you actually already put it super duper well when you said that it releases that tension, right? And she addresses this in Nanette. She says, you know, the job of the comedian is we set up that tension and then we relieve it. We set up that tension and we relieve it. And at the end of her show, as much as I admired it, she doesn't relieve the tension at the end. And it's on purpose. It's not like she fails, right, to do that. It's a very purposeful choice that she makes as a performer. And it's a powerful choice. It's an interesting choice. But as a comedian, I was struck not necessarily by the message, but by the subversion, the trust we're given by our audience when we fail to deliver that release of tension. And I think it's purposeful. Again, it's not like she failed in any way, shape, or form. But I found myself, I'm sure there's lots of straight-looking white dudes out there who didn't like the fact that she called out straight white men. And to me, that was sort of neither here nor there. I thought she made some valid points. There were some points I had questions about. She was talking about her experience. It wasn't really my place to comment on that. But as a comedian, the thing that I was the most uncomfortable with was that lack of release, was the fact that she took this format, which is so based on trust, so based on a mutual understanding, and she subverted it. I think it was brave. I think it was daring. It was obviously incredibly powerful. But as an artist, I don't know that it's for me. So I think it was an amazing special. I think she did amazing art. But I don't know. To me, that transformation of the relationship is fascinating. And I won't necessarily say I think it's right or I think it's wrong. She's an artist. She does her own thing. I will say it made me incredibly uncomfortable. That was the thing in the special that really rocked.
Uncomfortable? I don't know, sir. I call balderdash there. I've seen you walk on stage with no pants on. I really don't see what can make you more uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'll walk on stage without pants 1,000 times as long as I get the fucking laughs, you know? Get the fucking laughs.
Speaking of getting the laughs, Eli, now you and the boys are traveling also abroad to do your show. Have you noticed maybe a difference between the cultures on how they react to humor?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, what our fans view us as changes so much from place to place, where we go. You know, it's funny, we've become, when we make our show, and still when we create our show, we're the dick joke guys. We make dick jokes, fun dick jokes, and throughout it, largely through Noah and Heath's example, there's been an undercurrent of, hey, this is a community, you're welcome here, you're loved here, you're safe here, no matter who you are or what you are, you know, men, women, other identifying people, gay, straight, all that good stuff, black, white, we're welcoming to all. But that's always been the undercurrent to us, and fortunately, or honestly, unfortunately, that's kind of rare in our particular corner of the universe. So for a lot of people, we're less the dick joke guys and more the guys who told them it was okay to be a feminist, or it was okay to be black and queer, and that you were welcome into our community. So it's a weird line to walk, because, I mean, look, some people want me to jump out in my underwear with my ass cheeks cut out of whatever outfit I'm wearing and be like, I'm gonna fuck up, bleh, and then someone interrupts me, right? That's what they want from me, and they enjoy it, and they're at the chuckle hut. But then there are people who are like, you're the first person I ever listened to talk about having depression, or you're the first person I came out to with my real gender identity. Mm. And that burden is incredible. And then the trust that people place in us is, you know, awe-inspiring. And the best we can do sort of as we travel around, entirely at the privilege of people who come out and see us and think we are worth, you know, the money for a ticket, is to serve that well. Mm-hmm. But it's a heavier, I'll tell you, it is a heavier burden than get the fucking laughs. I've always been comfortable getting the fucking laughs. I'm not always comfortable being the person who tells them it's okay to be trans. I'm like, don't you want to talk to a grown-up? I'm just going to tuck my balls into my butt cheeks. If you could go talk to a grown-up, I feel like I'm not a grown-up. Go talk to one of the adults.
The comments of Eli Bosnick are not necessarily those of Left of the Valley subsidiary employees. Or oh my god. Oh boy. Okay, so let me get this straight here. You're saying that when you go abroad, people are looking at you guys more as to a safe haven than the actual, like instead of comedy, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely part of the comedy. Yeah, I mean, we are definitely comedians. They're not like, hey, you're the, you know, you're not, I don't think we're anyone's Richard Dawkins. I don't think we're anyone's Hitch. I mean, Noah's probably some people's Hitch. But I do think that for a lot of people, based on the feedback that we get, we are the first place where it's comedy, it's fun, it's yuck-yucks, it's dick jokes, and Eli being wacky, but there is an undercurrent that they are safe and that they are welcome and that they are loved. And when people present you with that, when people take
you to the side, which happens to me every time we do a live event. It's going to happen to me. We're doing a live show this week. It's going to happen. Someone's going to pull me aside, and they're going to tell me about something incredibly heavy and incredibly personal that I helped them through with my wacky movie review show, and it is mind-blowing. It's an honor, but it's mind-blowing.
But doesn't that validate everything that we've been saying up to this time, that comedy has this place in society that gives us that release and gives us that freedom, you know, to feel it's okay to be myself and to embrace you for allowing that to happen? I mean, that's exactly what we've been saying, and you're living proof of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's a story that I tell all the time because it blew my face off, and I'm sure this girl was just like writing a nice note, but it blew my mind. This girl wrote us and she was like, hey, I'm 1 year out of the Mormon church. I'm sort of negotiating that I'm not Mormon anymore with my parents. I was listening to your first ever Mormon movie month, and you guys were listening to Johnny Lingo. You guys were reviewing Johnny Lingo, a movie that I had grown up on, and you all talked about how sexist it was, and I realized that you were the first men in my life who had used the term sexist and meant it.
Mm.
And I just thought, like, what an incredibly strong person to make it through that much challenge, and what a gift for us to be able to welcome her into a world where she knows, like, hey, come here, you're safe here, we get it, we're with you. You know, but that message, again, just, I'm sure it was just a nice note somebody wrote, just blew me away that I would have anything close to that effect. Because again, when you're the clown, you want people to be like, I liked when you took that pie in the face. You don't want people to be like, you saved my life.
Yeah. No. Actually, it's very deep. I'm quite touched by that story. That's pretty amazing. Eli, a couple of weeks ago, we interviewed Seth Andrews, and a couple of weeks before that, we interviewed Arn Raw, and we asked him a question, and I'm going to ask you the same question. If you take a look back at the past 10 years, and you look at atheism, have we progressed as a movement? Are we falling backwards? Where do you see us going?
Oh, I think we've progressed tremendous amounts. I think we've progressed so much it feels like we've regressed. You know, for those of us who were, you know, atheists just after 9/11, or for those of us who were atheists in sort of the beginning of YouTube, when, you know, a largely the internet atheist community was in the comments section of YouTube, or, you know, speaking of Seth Andrews, in the Thinking Atheist website, you know, in those message boards, right? Mm-hmm. For those of us who were early in atheism, it was a small community with very few people. You know, one of the things that people talk about a lot that I think we tend to underestimate as a community is that atheism really used to be sort of the penchant of the academic, of the philosopher. You know, there were casual atheists, there were nuns, there have always been nuns, but the idea of active atheism was like active anti-racism, right? It just didn't really exist as a social justice movement. But now we've expanded, right? We've expanded, and a lot of our voices that were with us early on in the movement, especially in the movement of new atheism, have gone in different directions. Not all of them good, not to name names, but not all of them have made the best choices. Not all of them have the best ideas anymore. But I think that's because our movement has grown, you know, and I think the core of your question is, have we gone backwards? Because sometimes in our corner of the movement, which is internet atheism, it can feel really toxic, it can feel really poisonous. And the answer I give to that is, come to a live show, come to a convention, and see that community that you think is lost is still there. Mm. Is still there and is largely unanimous in good and, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Give me one second. I'm gonna
naked.
In good and forward thinking, right? We really are still a very forward thinking group, and I think we're moving forward. Despite our growth pains, and despite the fact that as large as a group as we've become, we've inherited some assholes, and yeah, maybe a few of us have turned into assholes. No. Not naming names.
He's looking at me when he's saying that. No, I have to completely agree with you because, you know, you could tell because just by the way the Christians and the Muslims, for example, are doubling down their attacks on atheism, right? 20 years ago, you never would have seen atheism on TV, you know, with a full debate, you know, so now it is. So, excellent. Eli, what's coming down the pipe for you guys, for the guys at Puzzle in a Thunderstorm?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have a live show in Chicago.
Woo-hoo.
This coming Saturday, the 11th. I would tell you about the Platinum Night, except it's sold out. I would tell you about the VIP tickets, except they're sold out. What we do have is the regular show tickets, and you can check those out on our website or just by Googling God Awful Movies Live in Chicago. That'll come right up. You can come see us. Oh, no, it's not God Awful Movies. It's Citation Needed.
Citation Needed.
Live in Chicago with Tom and Cecil from the Cognitive Dissonance Podcast. We've got a ton of fun planned. It's going to be an absolute blast. So Google Citation Needed Live in Chicago. We have a live show coming up in October in London, which we have not sold a lot of tickets to. So if you're in England or can reach England, get there, because otherwise we can't afford to come home. We'll be forced to live there. Let's see, what else? You can check out all of our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else podcasts live. Mm-hmm. And I also have a blog, which I haven't updated in a while, but I have it. It exists.
Yes.
And it's really good.
You flatter me.
Maybe you should send me the coordinates for your blog. We'll pull that in the show notes. Is there any chance we're going to see the crew at come up here to Canada anytime in the future?
So here's the thing: we have a ton of people who've been like, "Come do a show in Canada," and our answer is always, "Fucking where? You're the biggest goddamn." And the other thing is, When I go to a Toronto Canadian and I go, hey, we're thinking about doing a show in Vancouver, they're like, oh no, fuck Vancouver. Let me tell you something about Vancouver, okay? They have a dog there. It's a big old dog, and it'll eat you. It'll eat you right on the street. I'm going to tell you right now. You're going to come to Toronto. We've got marijuana. You'll act like the whole country didn't legalize marijuana. We got marijuana. There's a great vegan place. My cousin went there. I've never been because I like food. But my cousin's been to this vegan place. He says it's fine. So the problem is, if we do one Canadian show, we have to do 11. And my worry is we have 11 Canadian listeners. Like, it's just going to be me and you guys sitting at the first live show and you guys being like, woo! Yeah.
Hey, that sounds Canada perfect. Show. That sounds perfect to us. Just,
are you,
you know.
Are you trying to say we're not enough for you?
Oh, my microphone is broken. My microphone is broken.
I'm going to add some sad violin music in the background as soon as this is done.
Well, just wash that all out of your mind and come to Vancouver. Just don't listen to anybody else. Listen to us. You trust us. We love you. We wouldn't steer you wrong. Vancouver.
Yeah.
Vancouver. That's the only place to go. I got
that's it. The people from Seattle will join us up here anyway. We're just 2.5 hours north of Seattle. Yeah, we went to Seattle downtown last time, right? So, hey.
We would love to come do a Canadian show. The other thing is we need to figure out how to, like, legally do that. Because you can't just stroll in and be like, I'm going to charge people some money for stuff. That cool?
We'd probably be like, yeah, sure.
just give them a joint as you're doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Y'all in a trade war after all.
Eli, thank you so much for doing this for us today. I really, really appreciate that. But if people want to find out, they want to get a touch of you and the boys at Puzzle and the Thunderstorm, where can they find you?
Again, all of our podcasts, God Awful Movies, Citation Needed, The Scathing Atheist, and The Skeptocrat, are on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else podcasts live.
Fantastic. Before I let you go, Eli, can we have Mr. Trump say, hi, I'm Donald Trump, and I took a left to the valley.
Hi, I'm Donald Trump, and I took a right. Wait, one second. I gotta put my hands up here. And then that one's the L. Okay, I took a left at the valley.
And that was Eli Bosniak. Oh, what can you say about the guy? He makes me laugh. He's so hilarious.
Oh, yes.
He makes me laugh in my worst depression.
I think I'm in recovery.
Yes, yes. You're okay. The tranquilizer's probably wore off by now. Yeah, I think it's always interesting to see what this guy has to say. And you know what? I'm always impressed by, no matter how much he is a comedian, he's also very deep and very knowledgeable about other things. He's not just a joker.
No.
Yeah. So, well, thank you very much for joining us on the show today. Guys, Ahmed, thank you so much for being here, bud.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. You can find us at leftofthevalley.com. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on at LETV Podcast. Send us an email, leftatvalley@outlook.com. You can give us a 5-star review wherever you find us. That really helps other people find the show, and let's face it, it helps us too. Coming up, what do I got? What's my thing?
So much. There's so much coming up.
There's so much coming up.
Okay. My stuff.
Many days.
Many days. So next week, we'll be talking to Godless Cranium, a YouTuber.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be interesting. And for the September, we'll be talking to Godless Engineer.
Lots of godlessness coming up.
A lot of godlessness coming on the pipe there. And we'll also be talking to Reality Rules, Stephen Woodworth.
Nice.
Wow. He'll be talking to him. And we'll also be talking to a couple of ladies that do their own podcast called Forsaking Faith.
Ooh.
So we got lots of stuff coming down the pipe, and we're working on a lot more stuff. So
exciting.
Yeah.
Buddy, whenever you want to come back, you come back, man.
Yes.
I don't see you often enough. I miss you, man.
No, that was fun. I'll definitely be here more often.
Oh, dude, I'd have you here every week.
Alright.
Well, when you move to Mission, you might be able to do that, actually.
Let's see, hopefully.
You know what? I'm the only guy here now, so I need another male, you know, to help against the onslaught of estrogen I've got in the room.
Are you feeling a little outnumbered there, Kev?
Yeah, I am feeling a bit outnumbered a bit. Thank goodness I've got Manly Man Augment here with me.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Until next time. Mystery. I'd rather see the truth than to bask in my own ignorance. Rather be alone than surrounded by damn idiots. As long as there's a breath in my body.
You don't see the mess that she leaves behind.
Don't.
Hey, I'm recording
you.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm recording. I'm recording all this. Is or Zeus, Thor, or Mithra, Vishnu, you don't believe in them. I think the reason is apparent. You do what you're told and believe in the God assigned by your parents. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith and unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist. Atheist, atheist. Now let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that thousands of children are raped by priests, and since they're holy men of God, they get away scot-free. And the Pope does his very best to keep it on the hush, don't wanna affect business, he loves money too much. We know that they love the kids, but how the fuck can we protect them while they planning to molest them? We teaching them to respect them. Respect them? Fuck that. The system is broke down, working backwards, and the only action or tactic I plan to practice now is to attack them. The parties of God's hands are bloodstained, millions of murders by believers, and they're all in God's name. And let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that many atheists are told to be quiet. You're not alone, speak your mind, time to let it be known. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen, I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith, and unsubstantiated claims, that's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist, atheist, atheist. I'm an atheist, atheist, atheist.